Link was bad.
Meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will now come to order. Time, Ms. Hinkle?
Time is 7:07.
In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was originally provided through the annual public notice on January 29th. Faxing the three newspapers designated by the board, the Huron County Democrat, Huron Review, and Express Times, posting on the district website, the main bulletin board, in administration offices and in each Clinton Township school, and finally faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Ms. Hinkle, may we please have a roll call?
Yes. Ms. Grant?
Here.
Ms. Brennan?
Present.
Ms. Brooks?
Here.
Ms. Emery?
Present.
Dr. Foy?
Here.
Ms. Figueroa is absent. Dr. Grantham?
Here.
Mr. Malloy?
He's coming late.
And Dr. Reedy Mackey?
Here.
Thank you.
Ms. Brennan, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this evening, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dr. Foy, would you be the process guardian for tonight's meeting, please? Thank you, sir. I'm going to move the presentation or the work portion of the agenda up to the front. So we're going.
Is your mic closer on?
Oh, let me see. Thank you. I'm going to move the strategic planning portion of this evening's meeting up to the beginning part of the board meeting tonight. And before we get started, I'd like to introduce our field representative from New Jersey School Board, Ms. Gwen Thornton. Some of you have heard her introduction already, but for those that are here for the first time, I'd like to properly introduce Ms. Thornton. Ms. Thornton currently provides district field service support to New Jersey school boards located in Hunterdon, Middlesex, Somerset, and Union counties. She comes to us with an impressive background and years of experience and knowledge in education, experience with school boards, governance, district policy, and the list goes on. Ms. Thornton has served on boards of education in Burlington, Camden, and Gloucester counties. Prior to joining the New Jersey School Boards Association, Ms. Thornton was office president of the Bridgewater-Raritan Regional School District. She is a former high school social studies teacher. Ms. Thornton, once again, welcome back to Clinton Township.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back.
My voice generally is large enough to be heard, but I will use this anyway. So welcome back. It's not on? Okay, well, it doesn't matter that it's not working. I'll just use my old-fashioned teacher voice and I should be able to be heard. So our goal this evening is really to work through where we started last time and just to give you some sense, and excuse my back. Engaging you in the process of strategic planning, and it's really a pleasure to be back. This is not the first time we've gone through strategic planning here in Clinton Township, and I know that the board and the community has found it to be very helpful. And the purpose of strategic planning really is to create a vision for the future, to talk about where you are today and where you would like to be 5 years from now. One of the things we know about education in New Jersey is that it continues to change and to evolve, and so making sure that you have thought about where you are and where you would like to go enables the board and the community to be more effective in allocating your resources appropriately, whether you're talking about staffing, whether you're talking about technology, whatever the kinds of assets that you need to put in place to ensure that your children are really prepared for the 21st century, for jobs that we don't yet know what they're even going to look like. So our goal this evening is to talk about developing a vision for the future. You will recall, if you were here at the last meeting, that we had an informational report on the state of the district. It's currently posted on your website. If you haven't had an opportunity to read it, your superintendent provided an overview as to where we are today in terms of the curriculum, in terms of the instructional program, the co-curricular opportunities for your students, and what she identified as the strengths and challenges that the district is going to face over the course of the next 3 to 5 years. We asked everyone who was here last time to identify and come to consensus around what they identified as the strengths of the district and what they saw from their perspective are the challenges that the district also faces. Because at the end of the day, the district's going to have to leverage the strengths that currently exist to address the challenges that are out there. And you might say, well, things don't change all that quickly. Just in January, the State Board of Education added financial literacy as a curricular requirement for the middle schools. People are doing different things. The state of Ohio in January just readopted and reinstituted cursive writing, which had pretty much gone by the boards, as it were, over the last 10 or 15 years. They've brought it back. They are going to replace PARC. There was a challenge to PARC in the courts, the assessments that your students are currently taking. So that's in flux yet once again. So education's going to continue to evolve and change, and making sure that you are prepared as a district to address those changes and challenges for your kids is really critically important. And we believe that by involving all stakeholders, parents, students, staff members, community members, it will help to make sure that every voice is heard and all perspectives are at least addressed together. So tonight we are going to work on visioning. You know, what is your vision for the future of the Clinton Township schools? All across many counties, but particularly in Hunterdon, I am seeing, we are seeing, you're seeing declines in enrollment. It's sort of the perfect storm since 2008 and the economic downturn. Companies have moved out of these lovely leafy, what I would call leafy suburbs, and moved back in closer to the cities. And so in many counties across the state, populations are declining in school districts. The birth rate nationally, but also in the state of New Jersey, is dropping lower than it has ever been before. Additionally, millennials are coming into their own, but saddled with the highest level in the state of New Jersey of college debt of any state in all of the 50 states. So it has been really challenging in terms of looking at that enrollment, and as your enrollment declines, how do you address that? What kinds of things are you willing to think about that you may need to look to in the future that may change the face of your district? And not just here. This is happening in Monmouth County. It's happening in Warren County. It's happening in Sussex County. I see it somewhat even in Somerset County in various districts. But in the districts that are very close in to either Philadelphia or to New York City, they have the opposite challenge. They're growing and their facilities can't contain the number of kids that they're getting because people who are moving out of the cities or emigrating are staying closer in to the center cities, mostly because there's a greater variety of housing. And one of the difficulties and the challenges out here in the leafy suburbs is that there's not a wide variety of housing opportunities for folks like there is in cities in terms of duplexes and apartments and condos and the like. That's coming much more slowly out here to the leafy suburbs. And I live in one of those leafy suburbs, right? We all wanted that. Was sort of the American dream for many, many folks. They're now building transit villages and they're building apartments and expensive condominiums over top of train stations. Now, I remember my parents talking about finally having enough with the GI Bill to move out of one of those apartments over a store into their own house, into a duplex after the Second War, when suburbs really began to grow. So the changes, wider changes in society, are also driving the changes in school districts, not just here, but all across the country. Here is your mission statement, which really identifies what you do, why you do it, and how you do it, and the purpose of your district. And that hasn't changed at all. But what we would like you to think about tonight is the art of seeing the impossible, the invisible. What do you see as those things that are out there? So, you know, when we talk about visioning, I want you to envision that you've just returned to Hunterdon County, hopefully after a long sojourn abroad someplace exotic, Tahiti. Well, at least it's warm. I'm going with warm tonight. I would have said Paris or London, but they're cold too. So let's go with someplace warm. And you've stopped at the Quick Check, or at King's, or at Wegmans, or at Costco's, or BJ's, or wherever you go, and you see, hopefully it's still publishing, a Time magazine, and it has Clinton Township Schools on it, the class of 24. That would be 2024. Schools that succeed. So I want you to think about, what does that mean? What does success look like for your students? What do they need to know and be able to do to be truly successful in 2024 when they go off to their next level of education, when they move off to the high school? And ultimately, thinking even more broadly, what will they need to be able to know and do to be successful in whatever endeavor they pursue after high school as well? Because really, you're preparing them for the next level, but ultimately you're providing the fundamentals that will allow them to be successful in high school and beyond, whether it's the workforce, college, certification, which is becoming very popular as an alternative to college, non-traditional methods and those kinds of pieces. So as you think about 21st century learning, they generally talk about four critical skills, and these are the softer pieces, but the ability to be a critical thinker, to solve problems, to be an effective communicator, to be able to work collaboratively with others, and to be creative. That these are skills that are as important as mastery of subject matter material. And so as you think about what your vision is, to keep in mind some of these 21st century skills that have been identified by various colleges and universities, by corporations and other kinds of institutions that are looking at the workforce as it comes out ready, thinking these are the kinds of things that we need. Global awareness, having a good sense of what their place in the world is and what that world looks like. And then literacy, not just literacy in terms of English language arts, but certainly in finance, economic, business, entrepreneurial skills. Those are all the kinds of things that in terms of 21st century skills we are seeing. Health and wellness. There is a real movement in education among social emotional learning for kids to ensure that we are making sure that our kids, while learning, are also well-rounded individuals who have good mental health and social skills. Civics, making sure that we are preparing them to be citizens not only of Clinton Township, of New Jersey, of the United States, but citizens of the world. And what does that look like? So not civics in a very narrow sense, but I want you to try to think very broadly. So even if your child's only in the third grade now, what does that look like? You know, when by the time they are a senior in high school, what is it they're going to have to be able to do and think about? Okay? Information, media, and technology. I certainly am not a digital native by any stretch of the imagination, but social media is a reality of life. Technology is, you know, part of what we do and use all of the time. What is that going to look like by the time your students are ready for the next level and moving forward? You know, we went through a whole period where technology was a standalone in education. We now have it integrated into the curriculum so that we are advancing teaching and learning as opposed to having technology as a standalone, technology for the sake of technology. When I sat on my board, we had tech labs, and teachers would take kids down to the tech lab, you know, once or twice a week. It was a special, the same way when I was a kid 100 years ago, home economics was a special. But those are the kinds of things that, you know, sometimes I hear from parents, sometimes I hear from educators, you know, we're putting kids out in the real world who don't have any of those kinds of skills around the domestic arts and how to do all of those kinds of things. That's where the requirement, I think, for financial literacy came from, that we really were putting students out there who didn't know anything about balancing an account or financially how to take care of themselves. So here's what we're going to ask you to do in your groups. And keep in mind, we want you to come to consensus in your group and to agreement. We would like you to identify and give your article a title. Why is Clinton Township on the cover of Time Magazine? What is it that you are doing that makes you so extraordinary and so unique and special that you're on the cover of Time Magazine? And then give us a list of those 10 key initiatives that you've put into place, whether it's Future Ready, Sustainable New Jersey, whether it is a course in domestic and home economics, for the lack of a better term, that you are preparing kids, all kids, to be able to be independent learners and independent. So we would like you to brainstorm and come to consensus. Please assign someone to be a recorder. Don't make that recorder also be the reporter. Be kind, okay? Split up the work. And think globally, think big picture, right? Not just tomorrow or next year in 2021 and 22, but think big picture for the future. What do kids need to know and be able to do moving forward? It's not that I have that answer. It's what is the answer for your community and your district. So we have groups with your name tags. You have a color dot. And keep in mind, next meeting is a dotless night, so you have that to look forward to. This is the last night when I'm making you break up into groups and dots. The green group is over there. The red group is over here. This is blue. And somewhere there's another one. Green is back there. So you can have at it. We will be around to help if you need it.
Can't put all those dry ones aside. Thank you. Okay. I So, right? You talk to someone all the time, you're Thank you. Right. Thank you. Thank you.
And if you have an iPhone, everyone will know who's really answered or not, right? Till they fix it? Right.
All right, we're going to get back together. If I could have your attention.
I don't know. I don't think so. Probably not.
Can I have your attention? Thank you.
Oh. Because that's on behind you.
Okay, that's fine.
I apologize.
Oh, I don't care.
Unless you want to stand there, everyone else.
I don't.
No.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll take a volunteer group first. We'll let the orange group hold for us.
Socialize and develop their emotional but they're emotional worlds, so that they don't have to deal with those emotions one-on-one as opposed to better removed. Social emotional support for students, staff, and families. I find that there's a lot of distance based on the fact that parents, a lot of two-parent working families these days, you don't see a lot of parents here in schools. So we want to make sure that we're supporting all of that, bringing those teachers back into the, the parents back into the schools, the communities back into the schools. We want to do this to a degree by turning the students into leaders, having them be the ones teaching things like what is Instagram to parents, to, you know, whatever the equivalent is in 2024, since Instagram probably have gone the way of Dodo. But the students would be the ones leading these kinds of interactive beings with parents. So the parents would be like, well, my kids are on it, so you gotta go. Right? And we did talk a little bit about the feasibility of having parents put their phones down during this mess. Not sure that would work. Parent and teacher partnerships, so it came up, it's being said, don't have private schools require parents to provide a certain number of volunteer hours, and we discuss something along the same lines and bring those parents in to help do the things that they can do. Ditch the tests, not all of them, but keep ones that are developmentally appropriate assessments. Why are we testing for knowledge of fractions in third grade? It's a fifth grade developmentally appropriate subject matter, not a third grade developmentally appropriate subject matter. Longer recesses for all grades. This ties back into the social emotional learning term. It ties back into digital citizenship. No devices during lunch, no devices during recess. Add positive behavioral supports district-wide. So when the kids are doing something good, you let them know. You let everybody know. And we should be caring for the health and wellness, both physical and mental, stress, challenges, like vaping, and the general boldness that we see in students, because they have an avenue to rebel that isn't as obvious as us passing them through classrooms, living in the city, or making fun of us digitally, and we never even have.
For example, here,
for some of those other co-curricular programs. Again, that feeds into giving our students a little bit more experience with leadership, so increasing the responsibility that they can have so that you're building the skills so they can go off and be leaders, or be leaders still while they're our students. We also agree teaching some digital citizenship, so teaching social media responsibility. We did talk about having, you know, real people with real experiences as one of our taglines for them, and building that face-to-face communication. And then finally, repeating what I said earlier, that we want to build with our students a bravery, be not afraid to fail, that failure is another step. So our tagline is training citizens of the world. And we think a cornerstone of that effort will be working on mental health, right? You see this systemically across education from the lowest grades all the way up through higher ed, and in our larger society, mental health and wellness is really something we're struggling with, and that ought to be a point of emphasis that we start with even with very young children. We think there is importance in continuing to be able to address lots of different learning styles, and that ought to be a priority of our educational institutions. Number three here is the social and emotional learning. And that's a pretty big thing for us, right? That's about being self-aware. It's about being empathetic, right? There's a real absence of empathy in a lot of the interactions we have in the world today, and we think that's kind of a core thing going to be teaching kids early on. We also have this been a respect for diversity and being more inclusive. So all different, you know, multifaceted nature of diversity, right? In every possible way, trying to have our students be able to engage in a more diverse society. Let's see. We were talking about technology, and I think, you know, kind of convergent with some of the previously espoused viewpoints here, this thoughtful embrace of the inevitability of technology in our lives, right? And trying to be thoughtful about doing that, teaching technological literacy in our schools. This last point here is about community engagement, and we talked about it taking a village to raise kids, and in every way, right? It's not just about teachers or about parents, it's about a whole community working together to educate our young people. And that, I think, means a lot more interaction among those different stakeholders in our school system and in the and investment in education of the next generation. Let's see what's on the next page here. Okay, we wanted to not neglect these sort of core competencies, and we wanted to continue to meet or exceed these core competencies, and that those are cornerstone of education in our society. And we think that even as we're talking about all these different new initiatives, we still have to be resting upon a very strong and solid foundation. We get to number seven in terms of citizens of the world, and you see that as multifaceted as well. That training kids to be able to engage in lots of different societal issues, from different forms of government to different cultures to the environmental challenges, and so that ties back to the sustainability commentary over there, and this notion of trying to help our kids learn to live within environmental bounds. And then, let's see, you guys have a problem here. Oh, yes, we want to value our educators, right? You can't have a very good school unless you have inspiring and motivated and happy educators, right? And so being able to continue to help educators feel those things through allowing them to do professional development, allowing them opportunities to interact with each other, both in inner district and across different districts, so that every day an educator is excited to come to work and help our kids learn to do all the things that we talked about. And we only got to nine, but I'd like to say that some of those other things are pretty big. So the last is this kind of partnerships, and we're imagining partnerships in lots of different ways. So with different school districts, not just our own, but with different school districts elsewhere in New Jersey, and thinking about about an appreciation of the experience of others. So maybe some sort of an exchange program, volunteering in our communities or in other communities, field trips to other places, and partnerships with other districts. And that's what we got. It's on to you, Orange.
Instructions, teaching, learning, professional development. And that sort of incorporates all of those pieces, including digital citizenship, technology is critical. That's a bit of a longer research, but that can be called the social, emotional, or health and wellness. You want those as separate ones?
What about emotional intelligence? You know, I feel like that encompasses it.
Okay. You think that encompasses it?
Well, neither is two.
Does that capture health and wellness?
Emotional intelligence?
I'm not sure.
I think emotional intelligence falls under that.
Social emotional learning.
Yeah, that's the word I think, learning.
Yeah. Right? Social emotional learning. That emotional intelligence.
Yes.
Yeah.
So one thing I don't know though is like jumping out, but I think that maybe we're all assuming because there are sort of state requirements about full competencies, right? But we are not going to have a very successful school mission if we don't continue to deliver on these sort of cornerstone pieces of the academic content.
Right, which is why I was saying the goal area of teaching and learning, which includes such things as all of the core, sustainability, social media responsibility, digital citizenship falls in there as well, professional development falls in there as a broad category, because what we're going to do at the next meeting, I will put all of this together, it will all look on the website, the information you all provided, and then at the next meeting, we're going to take all of those and I will group them under these sort of goal areas and then ask you to write goals that will incorporate all of these pieces for you. I would think if you want something about collaboration, community engagement, and partnerships, or communication and community partnerships as a broad goal area. Because that incorporates a lot of what I heard about collaboration, partnerships, community outreach, it takes a village, how do we get more people involved, and it's communication and those collaborative partnerships together, I think, that goes.
So, this sort of enforcement, sort of from the perspective of entertainment's encroachment into the learning process, and that's what a song is in the classroom, and saying something is affecting the tongue and the attachment, and that's the dating of the learning space. So we talk about enforcement from the security, we talk about enforcement in terms of lockdowns and stuff, but there's also an enforcement aspect that has to become intelligent or more to the path of education. There's policies. How do we actually get the students to decide that they don't want to use their phone? How do we get the students to decide that because they don't want to do math computations the way they resolve that as well, some of the classroom teachers hurt because they were prepared to do the job. So we need like a civic responsibility aspect in the program.
I think that's digital citizenship.
Yeah, but that's more soft, like artists is a little bit harder. Not so much in penalty, but just culpability, so that I'm not a code, and I'm getting it on the code. You can achieve it, and you just go back to it, and you do that.
You say sort of people say you should be character.
But it's from with an enforcement emphasis, you know, it's a little darker, I guess, and just saying just for digital citizenship.
I think you were enforcing.
That's really done through professional development, right. Development of policy. What is our vision? So if you're doing your own device, you know, to the district. I don't know what the policy is here, but if that's how kids are getting access, you know, maybe, may not be. And so those are all decisions that ultimately, based on the recommendation of educators, how do they want to use those devices, what makes the most sense, what apps are appropriate, what's not appropriate. Those are all decisions around that sort of digital literacy and what it looks like in digital citizenship.
I guess I'm just going to say again, some of the problems, and also, I'm not like reading and back and stuff,
is a key factor for us, and that ties into the vaping and all of that we're talking about.
But how do you pick up all the things that are not going to work? You have to have an actual solution to the problem.
But these are broad categories, correct?
Right now we're not pulling down into that. How do we solve that issue? We're trying to take your concerns and put them into broad categories so that the next meeting we can develop goals that will then include objectives or missions. And one of those might be to, you know, find a solution to this use of the digital. We have identified something we would really significant issue on what that is. I'm not saying it's not. You know what I'm saying? So you'll have an opportunity to have input in that at the next meeting. Is there anything else that jumps out at you for you as a group around being happy?
Yeah, I was looking at the list up there and I see 21st century skills, and I don't think that we, I think some of the things that we've talked about as inclusion and either social emotional or public wellness are actually 21st century skills. You know, the ability to communicate,
collaborate.
Right. The resilience, you know, the we were talking in our group about how easily frustrated some of the kids are because they're used to instant response, instant answer, quick access to a solution for the game or the puzzle or whatever it is. So how do we teach them the ability to take the next step, try a different route without resorting to easy answer? And that's a thing for some of these harder to want. Exactly.
Right. And I place the one-on-one expression of either teaching and learning, okay, or social emotional learning, how do we even help the students learn to be independent, critical thinkers or problem solvers, right, which is one of the tests and skills, along with being a member of the team, working together collaboratively. Yes.
I think we need to touch on the global citizenship part, because that isn't really one of those four. You know, the diversity, the inclusion, the sustainability, that's like...
I'm just telling you, it all falls under here. You don't think so?
I think it does if you make that part of the curriculum, but I don't think it's...
I would tell you, it's already a part of the core of content standards, the ability to keep learning standards. All of those are pieces of that already included in the standards. And in our... have found expression and you bring it back to what we have there as part of both the social studies curriculum and the health curriculum. You're there.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Jim was saying with like the larger scale of, because in our district we look very different from if we go 30 miles and I feel like that does mean a little bit. In most districts, yes, majority of the standards, but in our district, I don't know if that is, if it's understood. But you're saying it's all there. I don't know if it's understood in our district the same way it is in other districts.
So that could go into as part of the mall area here, right?
So okay. Like hiring more diversity and which would hopefully welcome in more diversity.
And that would all order. Teaching and learning.
Okay.
Right? Recruiting and training high quality staff that are reflective of a diverse society. And that's the goal of the district.
Okay.
Okay. I would think that that was all here. The one piece that I think that is missing, and I hate to be getting downer about reality, is finance and facilities. Because we can have all of these wonderful ideas around STEAM and STEM and sustainability and maker spaces, and if you don't have adequate facilities to support that, and I'm not saying you need more facilities, you may need to alter facilities in some fashion in order to provide the kinds of learning spaces necessary. You know, classrooms were not designed for 21st century skills. You know, they were designed to have, you know, 25 staff in the world.
Mindset, because in most of our buildings we
were designed, and yours are newer, so you probably have several updated spaces that some of my districts that have really old facilities in New Jersey just simply don't have. There's no room for those kinds of pieces, right? So, and at the end of the day, we have to have the ability to make those decisions around what are priorities, how do we finance them, how do we support them as a community. So I would tell you, how do we need that as a fifth-fold area to talk about how we want to manage that and support. Is that okay with this group?
I would say sustainability falls into that.
I would absolutely say it falls into that. So having more efficient, effective green buildings teaches kids, you know, civic responsibility. I mean, it has a whole host of positive pieces to it.
As does the safety aspect of it.
And that is the one piece that we articulated with the first meeting that I did here tonight, and that is the ongoing need to make sure that we are providing a safe learning environment for students and staff. And whatever that looks like as we move forward, because that's just always a concern. And that was all I needed to do. So tremendously broad categories and not limiting. And what we will do is take all of these and put them under these five categories. Some of these things might fall under more than one, but then you'll have the opportunity to decide where you want to put them and then what the emphasis is. So are you good with all of this?
Yes.
That was your task for tonight. I completed it in a timely way. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I truly appreciate it.
Okay, I'd like to move on to the next portion of our agenda. I'm going to move over to the report of our superintendent, Ms. Michelle Cohn. Mrs. Cohn, may we have your report for this evening, please?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, and thank you for everybody for the wonderful work. I just wanted to address the recent closures. We had the closure due to illness, and I wanted to first address that so people had an understanding of the numbers we were dealing with and our process. So on January 25th and 28th, we closed due to a high level of student absences. We started noticing on Tuesday, January 22nd, that the absence rates for the district had increased. We had two buildings, which was PMG and Round Valley, which were at, you know, between 20 and 30, which is not unheard of on any given day. The middle school, however, had 86. That's a little bit more unusual. So the nurses began, thank goodness for our nurses, they did a fantastic job. They began very closely monitoring student illnesses as they're reported, absences that do come through the main office. Parents will often give us the reason for a child being absent. So the nurses began that process. We were revisiting that on a daily basis. On the very next day, January 23rd, the absence rates in the two buildings, again, were, you know, around 20-22 for the PMG and Round Valley School. The middle school rose to 135. So from one day from 86 to 135 was alarming. We had parents calling in saying that their children had confirmed cases of the flu, and in many incidences, those children had been vaccinated. So we did contact, that morning we had 27 children go home here from the middle school. That's a very high rate in middle school. It's not really something a middle schooler likes to do, to go to a nurse, and certainly not to go home. They're very aware of their classes and wanting to keep up. So we made contact with the county health department, the school doctor, and they, which is required by statute, when you get past a certain level of absences, you're required to report to the county health department. We also made the county education office aware, and the school doctor. So what they asked us to do is to put some measures in place. It was recommended to keep students apart. which is very difficult. They call it, in epidemiology, it's referred to as social distancing. So if you know, say, your eighth grade in particular had a very high rate of illness, please don't have an all-school assembly. Well, that makes sense. And so they also asked us not to allow after-school activities, so we would not want to share those germs with other districts or bring other students here to get those students ill either. One of the things that concerned us was that even though we were keeping students apart the best of our abilities, they all ride the buses together. Mm-hmm. And so we did contact transportation, and they began disinfecting buses, and that was really important because as soon as our one bus, you know, drops one school off, they go to get our other students for another building. So we knew that was going to be an issue. They asked us to report back to the school doctor and the county health department on Thursday, which we did. On Thursday, January 24th, the absence rates in two buildings, the Patrick and Garrett again in Round Valley, rose to between 28 and 38. And we knew, okay, it's starting. And we knew many children had siblings at the middle school, possibly sharing those germs. The middle school on January 24th was already at 156, and by 9 a.m. in the morning, nearly 50 children had to be sent home. And I'm sorry, Mrs. Hammond, that was a really rough morning. It was reported we had 12 nurses, one of which is Mrs. Hammond, thank you, and other personnel wearing masks to help
Nurse Hammond
with the sick children. They were really, really uncomfortable at waiting for parents to come get them. So up to this point, it really had been some general complaints, fever, flu. Today it was norovirus on the 24th. So when we had a conference call that afternoon, we had an epidemiologist from the State Department of Health, the CDC, Department of Public Safety, County Health Department, and the school physician all on the phone with myself, Joanne Hinkle, and Alexa Ingram as Director of Special Services. We discussed the data over the number of days, and we discussed the new data. And although we had put measures in place, you know, distancing the children, not sharing, not going out, we canceled field trips, we didn't want to share these germs, the agencies do not get into the mix on telling us to close, which is what I had said in my letter. They don't recommend closing. They kind of like to watch for the pattern. We had enough evidence things were going downhill, and that's a local decision. So that's what the Board of Education and we do in our district. So at that point, when the school doctor heard we had a secondary illness, his recommendation was to close. He said, you really have, at this point, so many children that need to go home. You're having a hard time keeping up with that. And we do know there's norovirus. We learned a lot about norovirus. One of the things that we learned is that 12 days, those germs can linger. And somebody might feel very comfortable, like, okay, I've been sick for a couple of days, I'm great. No, that germ is still in the household or in the school. We do use green products here that are very safe for children, and they get a variety of germs. We were told with this type, this is what sends the cruise ship back to port, so we were told we really needed to bleach everything. And so that's what we did. We just made a decision to close that Friday, the 25th, and through Monday, the 28th. That was a bleach weekend, starting with Friday. I met with custodial staff. We talked about protocol along with Dan Gorman, you know, to talk about every area that needed to be touched. I have a few photos because for those of you with young children, you know, we really love Legos, but when you have to wash all of them in a bleach bath, they really are not very much fun anymore. We were told we really needed to bleach every single surface. We have the equipment here in the buildings to do that. We were told it does need to air dry, so things were treated twice. These objects were soaked in bleach baths. You're not supposed to wipe anything because of another contamination. They had to be laid out in hallways throughout all of the buildings to dry. Every little dinosaur, you know, every piece of Lego. Kids had a lot of stuff. So that's what we did. So the CDC was very helpful in you know, going over those protocols with us, guiding us through what we needed to. And so they asked us to report again, all the agencies. So Wednesday the 30th, we returned to school. And the data shows that it was a good thing. Right now, our absences in two buildings are between 10 and 19. That's Patrick McGarren and Round Valley. That's very typical. And the middle school, I think there was 14 children absent, and today, this morning, 5 kids had to go home. And so going from 135 and greater and 40, 50 children needing to be sent home, I think things, I think we're under control. So I just wanted to report that out and give an understanding that, you know, it wasn't just the sniffles, and it wasn't just the flu. It was a complication of 2 very major illnesses. And we all know, we hear the horrible stories, you know, on the news, that it can be really serious for people, especially children. And so our first and foremost, the safety of our students and staff is very important. We did have a number of staff as well that were getting sick, and that was another piece of the puzzle here, because everyone's sharing germs and, you know, having to leave or not able to come into work, and we needed to really get a handle on it. So so that's our illness. That was our closure for that. I also just wanted to go over some of the protocols for the weather-related closures and delays. They're very difficult decisions. They're not made lightly. Many of those discussions are in the wee hours of the morning. Sometimes we're able to discuss at night. There's a lot of weather monitoring going on. I'm in contact with North Huntington High School, other sending districts, Clinton Township Police, the transportation company, and district personnel, in thinking about, you know, our parking lots, our sidewalks, is the building ready, is the heat on, you know, how are we doing? And again, a major consideration for student safety and staff safety. And so that's really where we make our decision, is based on safety. And so it's not a perfect science. Sometimes it's not even a good guess. And there's sometimes mistakes made, and that's part of the process, unfortunately. We do realize that it's difficult for working parents, you know, to have, okay, we have a delay, or there's a day off. We do understand that, but we base it on safety. I've seen accidents all over the news, and unfortunately buses in accidents, and that's the last thing that we would like. So that's what we really base ours on. We did have a closure this morning with the severe temperatures. All of the Huntington County schools were delayed yesterday with the strange weather we were having. Today, there were 115 schools delayed in the state of New Jersey. It's not just us. And we do follow and monitor what North Huntington High School is doing. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important piece. I feel that those, you know, 13 sending districts going to North Huntington, they have a very good pulse on what's happening. And we all use the same transportation company. There's a lot of conversation with the transportation company as to how safe those back roads are. And certainly we know the microclimates that exist. Flemington, that there was no snow the other day, and, you know, up a little bit north from that area, it was snowing like crazy. So, you know, we have a large span of area we really have to consider to keep our students safe. Okay? And can I introduce?
We will do that in personnel.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Cohn. So we've already had 2 sessions of our strategic planning process. I'd like to announce that our third and final session is scheduled for Tuesday, February 12th, 7 p.m. in the cafeteria as well. Very happy to see the larger turnout this evening, so thank you to all who came. And we look forward to seeing you return on the 12th. In addition, it's not too late to bring friends back. It doesn't mean you have to be in the first session to be able to come to the second or the third, or come to the second to have valuable input into the third session. There's input that's valuable in any one of the sessions, so if you know of anybody who can come to the third session, it's fine that they didn't come to the first two. Let's see. I would like to announce that the Clinton Township Administrators Association, the Clinton Township Education Association, the Clinton Township Education Foundation, the Clinton Township PTA, and the Clinton Township Board of Education have decided to work together to stock the shelves in the Clinton, in the open cupboard food pantry in Clinton. We wanted to involve all of our stakeholders in working together to stock the shelves for the open cupboard food pantry. Because of the weather, originally we were going to begin this program on the 4th of February. We're going to start it the following, which is on the 11th. It'll go for 2 weeks. Items that are needed by the food pantry, we've been in contact with them, are things like canned beef stew, canned soups, specifically pea, beef, and lentil, 100% apple juice, flavored oatmeal, canned peaches, pears, and oranges, canned potatoes, carrots, spinach, and beets, sugar, toilet paper, and tissues, laundry detergent, and ShopRite gift cards. Now, the gift cards allow the food pantry to go out and replenish the shelves in areas that perhaps they don't get the donations from, so that's why the gift cards were suggested for us to also let people know that that would be accepted. We have, I think the principals know this, we'll see.
Surprise.
What we're going to do is it's a contest between each of our four buildings. Whatever building brings in the most number of donated items will win the contest. And the students within the building who wins the contest will get to pick from 5 options that their principals have to do.
Within reason.
Within reason. So maybe do you... You could do that. You could do that. So I know that Michelle's going to work with the principals on what those 5 options are going to be, but we thought it would be fun to bring the community together with this type of program, involve the students, and of course involve our wonderful principals as well. So a flyer will be going out to everyone next week, and then we can begin on the 11th.
May I ask a question on that? How are we going to distribute that to cast the widest net? So it's our emails. Is the PTA follow-up email list?
Yeah.
Township list
available? Right. So what we're going to do is we're going to do email blasts to our parents. We're going to ask the township for theirs. The PTA is going to email blast through theirs. The foundation as well. So you know, we'll blanket the area with it and put the flyers all over town and try to encourage people to participate in this effort. Okay. Last week, as Mrs. Cohen mentioned in her report, the Clinton Township School District experienced a large number of student absences due to respiratory flu and gastrointestinal illnesses. In the best interest of the children and the staff, Mrs. Cohen decided to close the schools for 2 days to allow for the schools to be disinfected. Before the decision, members of our staff worked very hard to track and evaluate the situation as it escalated, and they discussed and prepared options in order to deal with the high number of illnesses and things to be accomplished when the schools were closed. Our district maintenance and custodial staffs were hard at work for 4 straight days, working to clean and disinfecting our buildings, as Mrs. Cohen detailed a moment ago. And on behalf of the Board of Education, I'd like to thank the following people for their hard work and dedication to the children and staff in Clinton Township School District. And first, I'd like to begin by recognizing and thanking our amazing custodial and maintenance staff for working very long and tedious hours during their 4 days. The 4 days when school was closed, they cleaned every single nook and cranny of all 4 buildings. And as Mrs. Cohen said, the level of detail that they drove down to included individual Lego pieces. So I can only imagine that's more painful than actually stepping on a piece of Lego. But nonetheless, it was very challenging for them. So with that said, I'd like to recognize the following members of our district's dedicated maintenance and custodial staff. And I'd like to name them now, but I've also asked Mrs. Cohen if they would come to either the next board meeting or a future board meeting so that we could recognize them on an individual basis.
We're going to give them all Legos, right?
We're going to give them all Legos. And a can of bleach.
Yeah.
So first, John Alfano, Thomas Antanasio, Teresa Bostick, Dave Fields, Michael Hook, Willard Hoover, Marlene Kopak, Robert Lemieux, Nicholas Lombardo, Robert Levering, Joseph Mazuka, Cliff McCatherine, Janine McKinney, Victor Sentiment, Douglas Smith, Giuseppe Turco, Richard Hoffman, Dylan Ottinger, and Dan Gorman, who helped organize the efforts with the maintenance and custodial staff. In addition, I'd like to recognize and thank our building administrators, office staff, and school nurses, who did a wonderful job caring for our students. CTMS in particular had the most students impacted by the illnesses, which required an all-hands-on-deck effort to manage the situation. Lisa Seaford came over to CTMS and assisted Allison Corrin in the health office. Both nurses were wonderful and did a fantastic job under the very challenging circumstances. So on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank all of you as well. Alexa Ingram, director of our special services, did a great job coordinating efforts with both local and state health officials, as Mrs. Cohn said. She kept track of data with all the nurses. She met with custodial and maintenance crews. So Ms. Ingram, on behalf of the board, thank you for a job well done. Ms. Joanne Hinko, director of special projects, worked quite diligently to coordinate the cleaning, communicate, and communication, and all the meetings with the maintenance and custodial staff. So Ms. Hinko, thank you for all of your efforts as well. And of course, I'd like to thank our superintendent, Ms. Michelle Cohn, who responded quickly to the situation as it reached critical mass and quickly organized her staff to intervene to protect both our children and our staff and make sure that they're working in a very safe, clean environment. So thank you very much. Thank you. I have a joint statement between the Board of Education and the Clinton Township Education Association. In December 2018 and January 2019, members from the Clinton Township Education Association and the Board of Education met for their scheduled monthly meetings. During these meetings, members from both parties set a plan for future meeting dates and discussed the need for community-based programs for which both parties could plan, implement, and participate in. The goal of fostering community-based programs is to bring our school district and community closer together. Members from both organizations brainstormed ideas that would allow the school district as a whole to become more engaged with all community members and stakeholders. The board will seek clarification on what types of events we are lawfully permitted to participate in, because there's different types of statutes of what we can do and how much we can participate in. So we're looking to get an answer from our board attorney on that. And the leadership of the Clinton Township Education Association is researching additional information on some of the potential community programs discussed within these two meetings. The district's administration will identify what types of sponsored events that can be conducted on school property. More information will be announced shortly regarding additional community events that we're working on. Both parties also agreed that they would provide their own respective organizations with summaries of each meetings. At the conclusion of each meeting, the group would continue to write and distribute joint statements that summarize the main points of each meeting that were discussed. Joint statements would be sent to parents, members of the district staff, community members, that have supplied their email addresses to the district and placed on the district website. Here's an update on negotiations with the Clinton Township Education Association. On Thursday, January 17th, 2019, members from the Clinton Township Education Association and the Clinton Township Board of Education's negotiation teams entered into a fact-finding mediation session with the assistance of a state-appointed fact-finder. The goal of this session was to move closer to reaching an agreement that would be mutually beneficial and acceptable to both parties. During the almost three-hour session, the fact finder helped the parties explore and develop creative options that brought both sides closer to a settlement. Although the parties have not yet reached agreement on their open items, the fact finder believed that the parties had made enough progress that he scheduled another mediation session as opposed to moving the negotiations process to a fact-finding hearing. The next mediation session is scheduled for February 27th. At the reorganization meeting, there are a few questions from a member of the public in regards to committee selections. I'd like to take a moment to address those questions. There are no limits on the number of committees that a board member can serve on. More senior board members typically serve on multiple committees because of their experience. Those board members who are in their first year typically serve on one committee there's a lot of new, there are a lot of new, sorry, a lot for new board members during their first year, so they tend to get fewer assignments during their first 12 months on board. There are also no term limits as to how long a board member can serve on a particular committee. Our bylaws state that the board president and the superintendent are ex officio members on all committees. Committee members are assigned, committee member assignments are selected based on how many years they have served on the board. Their backgrounds are considered. Members share what committees they would like to serve on. Committee chairs are consulted, and future aspirations as a board member are also considered. Okay. So on tonight's agenda, we have an addendum. We have an addendum to the agenda. Mrs. Cohn asked that we vote this evening on five action items tonight that are important for her to move the district forward. And these action items were originally scheduled to be discussed and voted on Tuesday evening of this week, but then school was canceled, so we could not vote on them during our monthly board meeting. But again, she asked us to move these forward because she has a lot of important things she needs to get done in her office and needs them to get done. We'll highlight those in a few moments, but I want to bring attention to the addendum items. So action item 19P159 should now read action item 19PN159. Action item 19P160 should now read 19PN160. And action item 19P161 should read action item 19PN161 tonight. These particular action items were listed on the board meeting again on Tuesday night, and because they weren't voted on, those numbers have to be now carried over the way they were on Tuesday night for tonight's meeting. So this is what's driving the addendum for this evening. Action item 19PN160 was listed on the January 29th agenda, but unfortunately there were two items with the same number. So therefore, 19PN160 is not listed, is now listed as 19FF161. I apologize for the confusion.
Mrs. Grant?
Yeah.
Can I make a friendly amendment to that, that addendum? Am I allowed to do that? If you look at facilities and finance, we've got 19FF158 and 19FF169. I believe 169 should be 159.
No,
or
actually.
Should 158 be 169?
No.
Or is it? Is this
it
correct?
It is correct. It gets
it's
moved
correct.
off the 129 agenda. The statute requires us to pull it off in those numbers. Although now they're out of sequence, it's very awkward.
So that's
but it's
correct.
The statute.
That's
yes.
correct. Just making sure.
Yep, thank you. We appreciate
that. Thanks. So I apologize for the addendum this evening and the errors found on tonight's agenda. So let's see, I'm going to open the floor to public comments on agenda items only. I would like to, let's see, to guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw limits comments to 3 minutes. We will adhere to this bylaw to allow everyone to be heard in a fair, consistent, and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This, too, is defined by our bylaw. The board will make note of any questions or comments that a member of the public will make at the microphone. If the Board of Education has an immediate answer to the question or questions, they will be answered at the conclusion of the public comment section. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 30 minutes. Yes.
You can come to the mic.
Come to the microphone.
Or is only for public comment?
This is only for agenda items only. That's correct. Okay, seeing none, I'd like to open the floor to our first recognition of the public, the same parameters that I mentioned under the public comment section for agenda items only apply here. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 10 minutes. You have a 10
if you could also sign in on the clipboard, thank you.
Okay.
Is this working?
I don't know.
Is this working? Do I have to turn this on?
It should be working.
It should be working.
Okay. My name is Arnie Olson. I live at 24 Westchester Terrace in Annandale. That's right behind North Huntington High School and Beaver Brooks. I was attending the January 7th reorganization meeting, and you addressed this issue partially just a moment ago, but three people were speaking, and essentially the question was negotiating committee is not using any of the new members, and another speaker is encouraging the new members to become aware of the negotiation issues, and then Vicki Frazzolone, who's the chair of the Democratic Committee locally. I'm a representative of the 12th District Democratic Committee. And she asked three questions, which you addressed this evening: how the members are chosen, and what the term limits were, and the limits to the number of committee members, the number of committees any one board member can serve on. So my issue is, it seemed to be that you were saying this evening that first year board members could only serve on one committee. You have four new board members, and one of the issues has been the negotiation with the teachers. And one of the principles of the Constitution is that the government is to represent the will of the people. So I think you have a statement from your electorate which is saying they want some changes in this process of negotiation. So unless none of the new board members were interested in serving on the negotiations committee, I still think that you should have at least one new member on that negotiations committee.
Thank you. Anyone else like to address the board?
It's down, we're recording it, but yeah.
I'm Mark Strauss. I just wanted to introduce myself, so if you don't know, welcome to our new board members. I'm the new liaison from Clinton Township Council to the Clinton Township Board of Ed this year. I'm hoping that's a good thing, so I'm looking to move forward. For those of you who don't know, I have 6 years on the North London Board, so I'm hoping we can work together, open up lines of communication, and move forward. So thanks for inviting me here tonight to this planning session. And although I did sit with the green group over here, it was nice to see that many of the same ideas and shared and passions about moving forward with our students and always putting the students first. So with that, I will pass my information on to the board president, I guess, and you can distribute it internally. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to introduce myself, say thank you for all you do, and I look forward to working with you.
Thanks, Mark. Anyone else? Okay. I'm going to move on to our Facilities and Finance Committee. Currently, the district does not have a full-time or interim business administrator. With that said, I'd like to draw attention specifically to Action Item 19, FF169. As I mentioned a few moments ago, this action item is looking for approval from the board to hire a firm that will conduct the day-to-day tasks associated with the financial portion of our business office. The Clinton Township Board of Education, like every school district in New Jersey, is required by law to appoint a business administrator. As defined by statute, the appointment of an interim business administrator can be for 1 day per week or 5 days per week. Since we need to have a business administrator physically working in our business office at least 1 day a week, Mrs. Cohen is looking for approval from the board for action item 19PN160. This action item seeks to approve Michael Folkowski to serve as business administrator. 161, sorry. And board secretary to work in the business office for 1 day per week at the rate of $500 per day. We're also looking at Facilities and Finance to approve
the payment of bills in the amount of $4,245,252.95. So with that, I am looking for a motion for action item 19FF158 to action item, or not two, but also including action item 19FF169.
Motion.
Motion, Mr. Malloy. Second, please.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Brennan. Any questions?
Quick question. Just for clarification for the public's sake, the $5,000 per month and the $500 per day, please explain the tie-in.
The $500 per day is for the individual, the actual BA that will be in the seat one day per week. We're required by law to have a person. The $5,000 per month, mm-hmm. Thank you, is for the firm that this individual comes from. That is his firm. His office will perform the duties of the business administrator. There are many that cannot be done in one day, and so that service will be provided through this agency.
And the $500 a day is above the $5,000.
Mm-hmm. Correct, it is.
So then we're looking at one day a week, 500 times 4 is 2,000, it's approximately $7,000 per month.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
May we have a roll call, please?
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Ms. Figueroa is absent. Dr. Floyd?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Dr. Wiegand-Wacky?
Yes.
Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to personnel, I'd like Mrs. Cohen to address one of the action items under personnel this evening, please. Thank you. This action item is action item 19PN 159, this is for the approval to hire Mrs. Jennifer Pacione, who's in our audience this evening. Well, I'm going to give you a little toot your horn here. For the Supervisor of Instruction Data and Assessment, Mrs. Pacione is a district employee. She started here in 2003 as a special education and resource room teacher for 4 years. After that, she began teaching inclusion in grades 6 through 8. When she went to Round Valley, she taught reading support, and this position evolved into now what we call literacy support. She specializes in intervention, teaches and manages the, it's called NJTSS, New Jersey Tiered System of Supports. It's an amazing program with very dedicated staff, and this is what Mrs. Pacione is involved with. She's in the process of becoming a Wilson Level 1 certified trainer. She administers many assessments associated with the literacy support program, collecting and analyzing data, which helps our students, helps our teachers to inform and adjust their instruction, and helps our students tremendously. It's a hugely successful program. She's also provided professional development to our staff, and using several types of the assessments that she's very skilled with. She currently serves on the following committees: IRNS, the BERT team, the SKIP team, and curriculum chairs. And she received her supervisor certificate in 2016. She holds a special ed certification for both elementary and secondary levels. And so we're very pleased and proud and very lucky to have Mrs. Pacione. So thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to bring attention to the full board members of the community. Action item 19PN 160. Personnel committee this evening is moving forward to the full board. A recommendation from Mrs. Cohn to hire Ms. Jean Hansen as a 0.5 FTE confidential clerical aide to work in the board office effective February 4th, 2019 through June 30th of 2019 at a prorated salary of $24,000. Many of you in the district can recognize Jean's infectious smile as she greets visitors at the CTMS main office. She joined CTMS in 2016 and serves as the afternoon secretary. Prior to joining Clinton Township School District, Jean served in the role of assistant to the business administrator in Harding Township School District. Jean also serves on her local Board of Education. And then I'd also once again like to bring forward action item 19PN 161, The committee is looking for approval based on Mrs. Cohen's recommendation to hire Michael Folkowski as interim. This is Administrator Board Secretary from January 22, 2019 through June 30, 2019 at a per diem rate of $500 a day. Mr. Folkowski is a partner in a company called School Business Office, LLC. He has more than 20 years of progressively responsible experience as cross-functional business leader with a strong experience in financial accounting, budgeting, purchasing, payroll administration, project management, contract negotiations, and general business operations. He has worked as a business administrator in the Ridgewood Public School District and the West Essex Regional School District. So with that said, I'm looking for a motion, please, for action items 19PN159 to action item 19PN161.
Motion.
Motion, Ms. Brooks.
Second.
Second, Mr. Malloy. Any questions? No? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Mrs. Brennan?
Yes.
Mrs. Brooks?
Yes.
Mrs. Emery?
Yes.
Mrs. Figueroa is absent. Dr. Foy?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Dr. Vicki Mackey?
Yes.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. I'd like to open the floor up, please, to the second recognition of the public. If anyone would like to address the board, please state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section for 10 minutes. Okay, seeing none. I'm looking for motion, please, to adjourn the meeting this evening.
Motion.
Motion, Dr. Foy. Second, please.
Second.
Good job.
Dr. Vimaki. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Meeting is adjourned.